right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today we are diving into Night Swim. How's that for an intro? We are going to talk about this ridiculous new horror movie about a killer pool that didn't quite come together as crazy as we had all hoped, but it was still a fun one to talk about. Joining me to talk about it is Jacob and Ben Burkhart, a couple of directors who also have a new movie out called Headcount, and we're going to talk about their movie as well after we get through some puzzle pieces here for Night Swim. Before we get to it, though, I do got to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together, wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you're listening right now, just make sure you are subscribed, hit and follow, all those things that make sure that you get all the new episodes as they come out, because we got a lot of episodes on the way. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. So with that said, let's get into this conversation about Night Swim and then Headcount. All right, it's time to get into Night Swim. I've got with me Jacob and Ben Burkhart. I am really looking forward to talking about this movie, but also talking about their new movie, Headcount. Jacob and Ben, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you.
Hello, thank you.
Were you guys, like, I know Jacob and I had talked a little bit beforehand. He said that he was, you know, a horror fan. Were you guys excited about this movie based on the ridiculous premise, or was it the James Wan influence on it? Like, because it's a very strange, you know, idea for a horror movie. And like going into this thing, I just thought it would be, I didn't know what to expect with it. You know, I don't think anybody really knew what to expect with it. And the trailers kind of played it close to the vest. Where were you guys at going into this thing?
Well, I would say, you know, we're both big horror fans, so I pretty much eventually see everything that kind of comes out. I think if you want to, you know, I think we're really big fans of keeping, you know, our finger on the pulse of whatever comes out, it be that indie or, you know, bigger studio. And so I was going to see it, you know, regardless one way or another, but I was familiar with the short film that came out like over a decade ago. And so, you know, that kind of progression from taking a short film and then, you know, eventually turning it into a feature, I think is something that we did with our film. And so that was another curiosity that I wanted to check out for this one.
And like you said, I'm all in for a horror movie that's doing something different, you know, and it doesn't, this movie almost could have been a Saturday Night Live sketch. It's so ridiculous. You know, this could have been directed by Lonely Island and maybe it would have been even better or crazier, but I just, you know, your curiosity just kind of gets the best of you. And I think that's probably what the marketing team is, you know, banking on, is people are going to be like, how do they make a scary pool movie? I guess I'll go see it. And
absolutely. Blumhouse, they are very good at picking up premises, you know, like things that they can easily put a killer trailer out there for that's just going to get everybody talking. Yep. And they have at least like 5 a year or something that like become like a meme and everything is just all buzz about them. But before we get further into Night Swim, it is you guys' first time on the show. We're going to talk about your film a little bit more later, but introduce yourselves to my listeners.
Well, I'm Jacob Burkhart. Our voices sound, me and Ben's voices sound kind of similar. So I know, but just trying to forget, trying to help people out. And yeah, we're from Kansas. We are based out of Kansas City now. We grew up in Western Kansas in the middle of nowhere. We have been making films since we were 10 and 8 years old, just using an old VHS-C camera up to now. And we've been making lots of short films, and we work in the kind of film marketing advertising industry. And Headcount was our finally got a stab at making a feature. So Ben, I don't know if you want to add.
Like you said, we've been making short films for a long time. And much like this film, our film is adapted off of a short film we made for a 48-hour film festival with the same concept and name, and then expanded into a feature. So, that's kind of the really encapsulated all there as best we could.
Yeah, yeah.
We did not go to film school. No. We are not in the industry at all. We have no like nepo in us. Like we really have been just doing this on our own our whole lives. But I love it. So.
You guys expanding this from a 48-hour film, I've composed music for like a dozen 48-hour films, and now I'm wondering which ones can like actually expand to a feature, and I don't think any of them, but you know, that's a whole nother conversation to have.
Yeah, you know, we have lots, you know, what's great about short films is they're great like proof of concepts.
Yeah.
And then you can actually pitch your short film and saying like, as opposed to it being on paper, you're like, here's it in action. And that's a really helpful tool. And so there's many other short films we've already made that we're expanding writing into features.
Nice.
So, yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And yeah, that is an interesting jump off point here for Night Swim. We'll start getting into some puzzle pieces in a minute. But Ben, you said you did see the original short that this was expanded
from? Yeah. I believe it came out in 2014. And in the short film, it's this girl and she's swimming in a pool, and then, you know, she goes under the water, and then she looks up and back to the surface while still underneath the water, then sees a figure, and then comes up and the figure's gone, and then it does it again.
Yeah.
And then she gets out of the pool and it kills her. And so there's not a ton going on, but there's more. One of my puzzle pieces I want to talk about that short film in this. So, but yeah.
Yes.
Very often the short film becomes the cold open of the feature.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sure. Yeah. That makes total sense. And by the way, for those listening, Jacob was just acting out that whole scene while Ben was explaining it. So that was really fun to watch. But let's start getting into some puzzle pieces. We'll start with you, Ben. What do you have for your first piece?
Yeah. So my first piece is actually another similar situation where it's a short film that got turned into a feature, and it's Lights Out, the David Sandberg, right? That's his name. David Sandberg. My notes said Andy Sandberg. That's not right. But yeah, he had a short film actually a year before. So in 2013, his short film, he made Lights Out. And then 2014 was the Night Swim short film. But anyway, if you're not familiar with that particular short film, it's actually a strikingly similar concept where it's his wife Lota. I watch all his videos, he loves to talk, so I know so much about him. But and in the short film, basically when the lights go off, like you see something in the darkness, and when the lights come on, they immediately disappear. And so it kind of plays with that concept, and that's similar to I'm under the water, I see something, I come out and it's gone. And so it was really interesting to see these two kind of like rather similar, like on off creature, they are creature not ideas kind of get expanded. And in Lights Out, you know, and in this film too, what they do is they take that little core concept and then they do a lot of like lore expansion to like explain. Sure. Like I think in Lights Out, there's like a fire and some girl maybe or something. This it's a natural spring that kills people. I didn't quite catch why the spring was evil, but then there's this like give and take where like you sacrifice, spoilers in case anyone, talking about the whole movie, but I think the idea in that film is that you sacrifice someone in the pool and then that heals someone else. And so anyway, I just thought that was an interesting parallel to see these two short films that had come out about a decade ago. I mean, Lights Out got made way before that, and seeing them made like kind of an expanded to a bigger feature. A part of me was like, there's no way they didn't see Lights Out and think to themselves, hey, what's another like similar thing? Or they saw it and they were pissed. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because it was so similar. And I just thought that was an interesting connection there.
Yeah, that's a great one to kick it off with. It's really interesting to think from like the filmmaking point of view, like where the light bulb goes off, where it's like, we've got this very simple, scary premise. And it's like, okay, what if it heals you? Like that's like such a strange jump to go to with Night Swim. But I guess it's tough to expand things like that, where you have this one really good premise that everybody loves, they want to give you money for, and you know, where does it go from there? But Lights Out is a great version of that, and so that's an interesting one to jump off with. Jacob, what do you got first?
I have a pretty old one. I maybe this will be the oldest one. But I think another thing that drew me to this Night Swim movie is Ben and I have, you know, I have a Letterboxd list called Creepy Indoor Pools that I've had for a long time, way before this movie came out. I think that the creepy indoor pool is a great set piece in any movie. And if you go all the way back, I think one of the OG creepy indoor pool movies, creepy pool movies, is the 1942 horror movie Cat People, if anybody has seen that, which is about a lady who is stalking a lady that she's jealous of, and she may or not be able, may or may not be able to turn into a cat. I think Cat People is maybe most famous for having what a lot of film I'm a lover, not an expert, but what a lot of people think considers like the first jump scare, the first official jump scare in a horror movie. And Cat People has a lot of, you know, a lot of in that movie is the DNA of kind of a blockbustery horror movies going forward. You know, it's not fully formed like Psycho or Peeping Tom might be, but it's, it has a lot of cool stuff in it. But there is a singular pool scene where the the lady who's being stalked wants to go swimming in the basement pool of her apartment complex, and it's at night, so there's kind of those Blade Runner shimmery lights flickering on the wall. There's all this reverb with the dialogue that's making it extra ethereal and creepy. And I bet it's one of the first instances of how do we make a pool scary just in film ever. And I think it's worth pointing out for that, because I don't think you would have this movie without Cat People, you know, 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's a good one. I've never actually seen it. I'm pretty sure I saw the 80s remake years ago. Cool. I don't remember if that's centers around that as well, but that's what I'm wondering. Yeah, I can't remember. It's been so long since I've seen it, but yeah, I mean, creepy pools and indoor pools especially, that's a great list. We're going to have to share that list in the show notes if you don't mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's a liminal space thing, I think. And we're kind of seeing liminal space horror get its time in the sun with Skinamarink and what are the other ones?
That, there's that kid that made that with Back Doors or whatever.
Yeah, it's
that's getting expanded into a feature. However, he's going to do that. That kid's not very old.
The freakiness of, you know, the place between places and the sterileness of an area.
Man-made too. Like these are, like, sure. It's not like in a forest. It's like this is a man-made, like stark kind of box you're trapped in with that limitless.
So liminal.
Liminal.
But, yeah.
Subliminal.
Okay. Thank you, Ben. Cat People's not a perfect movie. It's not, you know, but it's the pool scene's worth Googling, I would say.
Yeah. Right on. Well, I cheated a little bit. I'm combining two here for my first piece. Two pieces of M. Night Shyamalan here, because I feel like there's a lot of Shyamalan in this. Mm-hmm. We'll go with both Lady in the Water, which of course centers around a pool, and a whole lot of fairy tale-esque lore that doesn't necessarily make any kind of sense whatsoever. But there's creatures in the pool, and things happen if you do this, and I don't know. One of these days, I'm going to give it another shot. I don't remember liking it very much when it came out. But also Signs, which this movie, Night Swim, is secretly a baseball movie, because Wyatt Russell's character, he is really hung up on his baseball career, which has been taken away from him, and he wants it back so badly. And that is where this whole secret power of the pool comes into play, where he's going to be able to maybe get back his career if he sacrifices his kid. He doesn't even really realize that that's what he's doing, but that's what's happening here. But Signs centers around a guy who, you know, should have been in the big leagues or whatever, and it all comes back around to that baseball bat in the end that was you know, there the whole time and ends up being the big weapon by the end. We love those Shyamalan twists. But yeah, so you get both Lady in the Water and you get Signs, and you get just a lot of big idea M. Night Shyamalan here.
Yeah. I wish it had a little bit more of the confident flair and imagination of Shyamalan, this movie did.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that's a good, I think those are good. Mm-hmm. Those are good pieces for sure. Yeah.
I think he's been on a roll lately. Oh, like yeah. I'm a big old defender. I think old is like amazing. And
hell yeah.
It's so ridiculous and so over the top, but it's confident as hell. You just use the word confident. Yeah. Like he is going for something that is just so insane, and I think it works because of that confidence. So that's I think this director Bryce McGuire really kind of needed a little more of that confidence to kind of lean into this concept here. But
he's also, you know, you're also, you know, you just don't know when you're making a studio movie. You don't know how much the studio is pushing back and saying, you know, you need to hit these beats. Mm-hmm. It needs to happen. These beats have to happen at this time. You know, Blumhouse has a formula that works. And, you know, I try not to put too much onus on the director, but, you know, at the same time, how much was, what was the budget of this movie? And, you know, it's a January movie. Can't you take a little bit of a risk? So, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, you know, the other interesting thing about Blumhouse is that, you know, the movie Megan, the robot girl or whatever, I think, you know, that got marketed as, look at this dancing robot. She's a slasher. And then it's actually like, really more of this drama about, you know, this aunt that has to take over this, you know, her niece, and it's about motherhood. And I got, and so you're kind of getting a lot more of these kind of like drama elements that are getting sewn into these like Blumhouse films that used to just be, you know, kind of campy horror. And I saw that in this one too, where it's like, oh, it's like, oh, you feel bad for this guy. Then there's this relationship with, you know, his son feels like he's disappointed because he's not as good as baseball and all that stuff, but he's connecting with this other kid, and then there's like these happy montages of them like driving around and partying. And I'm like, and so a part of me is like what happened? Like we don't. I'm all for kind of you know, emotional stakes and having great character growth, but when you just kind of like some of these montages really turned me off, and I'm like, let's like make this stylistic. Like you look at, like you were saying with Shyamalan, like there's still these character beats, but like when those happen, it's not horror. They're still stylish and there's still like, you know, like nice camera work and good lighting. And that was the other thing about this film. I'll save that for my next pick, because that'll weave into that. I'll shut up.
Yeah, I was going to say that leans into some one of my other pieces as well. But yeah, let's go to your next.
So piece, it's actually, Ben, what you already said. It's Lady in the Water. So I didn't know. I didn't know if I was supposed to jump on that, but. What's so good about Lady in the Water is that it really understands like the aesthetic of this pool. Like there's this pool in this apartment complex, and there's all these plants around it, and it's always moody and misty, and it's just very atmospheric. And then when I watched this film, you know, they shot it in summer, obviously, because, you know, it's a pool, but there's just this starkness and kind of lack of texture, and I didn't get, like, when you think of a pool, I'm sure that cat people thing, like the pool feels kind of like an interesting area that has all these interesting elements. In this, it's like, it's just this plain backyard. Like there's not even a lot of interesting like elements to the pool itself. You know, they do everything they can. They use the drain. They use like the little like filter system. They use under the diving board, which I was like, wow, that's interesting. And so I feel like they could have had more, like they could have brought more kind of pool-esque like atmospheric elements to kind of help, you know, break up the, like the cinematography and stuff, I feel like, and get some more dynamic lighting in a way.
I think, you know, the pool could have had a light that changes colors, and then the whole final scene could have been like a red pool. And now you have, you know, or there could have been a water slide, and now you can put a water slide scare.
There could have been a waterfall, or there could have been like plants that were closer to it, a hot tub. And so I feel like they were kind of limiting themselves unnecessarily. Like, and so, you know, they did everything they could. And I was impressed that they were able to get a couple of, you know, to build some scares off of very, very few elements of a pool. But I'm like, they could have been more like Lady in the Water and kind of leaned into it and made it a little more fun and cinematic in a way. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to the cinematic nature, friend of the show, film critic Josh Bell, in his one sentence Letterboxd review said, for the movie Night Swim, 50% of the swimming takes place during the day.
Day swim.
Very strange choice there. I'm guessing it's to save on lighting. I don't know, but they really could have had some cooler shots there. I you're right though. I really like the under the diving board, like, because that's who doesn't relate to that, to like hanging on underneath the diving board. So that was a cool one. But yeah, you know, it wasn't one of my pieces. Like, I actually did bring it up. We do a trailer episode every month where we talk about the movies that are coming out and what maybe might, in, you know, have inspired them just based off the trailers. And I was thinking of John Carpenter's The Fog, which, you know, style for days. But, like, you know, more of that. You know, give us some fog, give us some smoke, give us some, you know, those, like you said, the red lighting, like, you know, some of that stuff. That would have gone a long way here. Yeah. But Jacob, what do you got
next?
It's
funny you mentioned John Carpenter, because I was really racking my brain. It's like, I feel like I've felt this formula before of somebody who's kind of intoxicated by a power and kind of gets corrupted by it. And I'm going with Christine. I know it seems kind of out there because that's about a killer car. This is about a pool. I think once you start kind of looking under the surface, some of the DNA starts to line up in that way of a person who's corrupted by some sort of mystical, mythical witchcraft force or whatever has to be kind of brought back. There's also, I think, the Stephen King element of this movie. I think what King did best is take common household objects or things that aren't necessarily scary, like a clown or a hotel or a cat or a dog or whatever, and, you know, make them freaky. So you could see Night Swim almost being a Stephen King short story, you know, that everybody forgot from 40 years ago. So, yeah, not just Christine, but I think Stephen King in general, I could just kind of see his particular brand of horror kind of seeping into this in some ways. But absolutely.
I mean, not one of my pieces, but one that I was definitely thinking about is The Shining. Definitely fits in there, you know, as far as somebody getting corrupted by some kind of force that you don't understand. And I mean, definitely, I think there's a lot of Stephen King here, and that goes back to the Shyamalan aspect as well.
Unbreakable. Like, he's kind of, the pool, the pool makes him unbreakable or whatever.
Sure.
At one point, absolutely. Wyatt Russell says, he's like, he's in his bed dying or whatever. He's like, and he grabs his wife. He's like, carry me to the pool. And like, that made me laugh.
We needed more of that. We needed more of that, that pool tech guy who's basically,
my wife loved that guy.
More of that stuff. Lean in, you know, go crazy. But I will go for my next one. I'm gonna go with The Ring. You know, this kind of goes right back to that, this kind of unexplainable force that you know, corrupts people. But, you know, the idea that this pool has been, you know, kind of passed on from person to person, whoever ends up moving into this house. And there's no getting rid of it. You know, even if you burn down the house, likely this ancient magical spring would get in somehow. Maybe it'll be a killer bathtub next time or something. But, you know, it's always going to be there, and it's going to get passed on to whoever moves in next, each family. So I thought of The Ring, and I think, you know, The Ring is one of those things that, it kind of comes up on this show a lot when we're talking about, you know, unexplainable killer forces that take over things and get passed on from person to person. Mm-hmm. It's so prevalent in modern horror.
I love that. And that's also a wet.
That was going to be my
with the well and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
It makes me wonder, you know, I was kind of joking, what's like the Lonely Island version of Night Swim? Like, what's the J-horror version of Night Swim? You know, there's so many ways you could kind of take this concept. Oh,
well, there's a movie called Aqua Slash about like a slide that people get killed on or whatever. So if you that's that version. If you wanted to,
David, do you like Ringu or Ring more? If you had to pick one.
I haven't seen either in like 20 years or something. I remember liking them fairly equally though. Yeah, I thought they were both good. I know, like, most people preferred Ringu, though.
Yeah, I kind of like The Ring more, but they're both good.
Yeah.
Okay. They're all better than Ringu, too. That's for
sure. Fair enough. Let's go to Ben's next piece.
Okay, so Jake kind of already ruined this because he said it. But then what I wrote, the what I wrote down before I wrote anything was Unbreakable Shyamalan again, because I kept seeing these. They had to have been unintentional, or maybe they were intentional, but I started making a list of things that I saw, and I'm like, this is like Unbreakable, because there's the beginning of the film where he falls into the tarp and he almost drowns, and that's like the ending of Unbreakable.
Oh yeah, you're right.
And then there's the you know, his hand gets healed, and so that's like Bruce Willis, because he can't get hurt. And then like Bruce Willis was like a football player, and then so there's like that athlete, and then he's a baseball player no more. And then like, wow. And then water is the weakness of him. And then water is like the danger here. And then the one that I about threw my phone was he's working out and his son helps him put on more weights and he's got more weights on than normal. And I'm like, that's just like Unbreakable. So like all that's of these crazy parallels kept happening. And I was like, I don't know if it was all just coincidental, but it seems like they are, but it's fun. It was funny to me, especially the part with the kid putting on more weights and he's like doing more than possible. And I'm just like, this is just too crazy. Like some person who had been some tester or some person who had been watching the rough cut should have brought that up and like leaned into it more maybe. Right. So yeah. Unbreakable.
That's so funny. I had my double Shyamalan puzzle piece and I didn't even think of making it a triple piece, but you're so right. It's like, that's perfect. That's a great one to include here. So yeah, that's hilarious. Jacob, let's go to your third piece.
I think this is a great, just to pump myself up. Oh, I think this is a great piece. This is a movie from only 3 years ago called The Deep House. I don't know if anybody saw The Deep House. Mm-hmm. This is a movie. This is a haunted house movie, but the house is underwater.
Right.
And these two divers, the whole movie, like most of the movie takes place underwater. They shot it underwater. It's more impressive as a technical feat, I would say, almost more than it is effective as a film. There's just, you can't really, it's hard to set up, construct a jump scene, a jump scare underwater, because everything moves so slow. But yeah, I mean, technically, it's very impressive. They did all this underwater photography. They did everything they could to, you know, make a scary movie completely underwater. And yeah, it's worth watching, kind of like Night Swim, in that it's novel in its premise. And it might also be a Blumhouse movie. I don't remember.
If you're a horror buff, you need to watch it from your brain kind of can't quite process the fact that I've been underwater for that. These characters have been, I mean, they have whatever they have the scuba gear on, but it's very dreamlike in that they're in this house that's completely full of water. So they're going, so you're going into rooms and stuff, but you're underwater. So you're floating in the air. And so it's a very interesting, it's a bold concept that's even bolder that they pulled it off.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds great. That sounds awesome. I'm going to have to watch that. When you first said from a few years ago, I thought you were going to go with one that I haven't actually seen, but a friend was telling me about Blumhouse's Fantasy Island remake.
Oh, God.
Did you guys see that?
I think I have. Is that the one at one point? Is it like, is it your fantasy to like kill this girl that made fun of you? And she's like on the other side of the glass or something.
Something like that.
Yeah. I've seen it. It's not good.
Yeah, it grants your fantasies and then it, you know, everything ends up bad.
Yeah,
so yeah, no, but yeah, it definitely seems to fit in. But yeah, The Deep House, that sounds great. And it sounds like the kind of crazy that I was hoping this would be. So I'm going to have to watch that for sure. My last puzzle piece, and like I said, this goes to the extra drama of the characters and their stories that just kind of like gets sidetracked from the horror aspect. But I was just thinking of Lifetime movies in general, like every one of them where, you know, it's an idyllic neighborhood that the family has to move to. And, you know, they kind of got to fit in with their new neighbors and the new job and somebody brings a pie. And I wanted to include like one individual Lifetime movie just as an example. Shout out to friend of the show Rolf Konevsky, who directed Pool Boy Nightmare, which is very, very ridiculous.
Pool Boy Nightmare, that sounds good.
It's incredible. But you know, it's definitely a different kind of a pool based story, as it is about a killer pool boy. But you know, essentially they're both centered around a pool. So, you know, I figured I'd include it anyway. But, you know, it basically just goes back to all these kinds of Lifetime movies where that is how they get into the situation, and then it kind of just goes from there. And we spend way too much time on that family stuff here at Night Swim. We should have gotten into more of the nightmare aspect.
Yeah. the real estate lady felt like a Lifetime character.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have a big party and invite all the new neighbors and all that stuff.
If there's a Night Swim too, I want it to be about her with selling a new house.
Selling more pools.
Yeah, because they're, you know, the mom was like, a little girl died in this pool. Why didn't you tell us? And she's like, well, I just
got to make the sale.
I got to make my commission. So.
Yes, I that's one thing about this movie that I found a little bit weird is I really liked all the side characters.
Yeah.
Like we already talked about that, the pool tech guy, you're talking about the real estate lady. I also really liked the Asian lady who is like the mom of the little girl who had died there previously. Like she really plays it up and like her, it's all for her son who went on to Washington to do some kind of, I don't even know what it was. All the side characters were great.
I will say I didn't expect that kind of reveal of, oh, hey, it turns out she actually sacrificed the daughter so her son, and then that was that was even a little more interesting because this is like a weird broad thing to say, but I know that like in traditional Asian culture it's more like the son, like having a son take over the family, like that's it, you know, back in the day. And so she's like, I need to save my son as opposed to my daughter, and I was like, well, that's kind of weird. But will say I can't stand that cliche of seeking out like the person that this paranormal thing has already happened to ask them advice, which happens in like almost every time there's like one of these trapped in some kind of weird.
They got to go to the insane asylum to kick off act three.
It's they got to go talk to the person it's already happened to. And it's like, let's stop doing that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I will read down the list of puzzle pieces we just talked about, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts here on Night Swim. We talked about Lights Out, Cat People, Lady in the Water, and Signs, Christine, The Shining, The Ring. You threw Aqua Slash in there, which I got to see. Unbreakable, The Deep House. I threw Fantasy Island in there. Pool Boy, Nightmare, and Lifetime movies in general. And I think we got into some interesting stuff here. I was also thinking one other thing, you know, James Wan being a producer on this, he was supposed to do a spinoff after Aquaman inexplicably made $1 billion. He was supposed to make a horror spinoff, The Trench, which I'm wondering if maybe there was a little bit of this project that appealed to him as a producer because that was something he really wanted to do underwater with demon creature monster things, you know? So I was thinking about that too.
I will say Aquaman 2 is the most hilarious film I've seen this year.
Well,
and I think I don't know if it was intentional.
James Wan knows.
But correct me if I'm wrong, didn't James Wan at Blumhouse, didn't they just recently kind of combine their two, they merged.
Yeah.
And so was this film, I guess, because
it was a co-production, but I think it was pre the merger.
Right. Because
Atomic
Monster, isn't that Wan? Because I saw that and then the Blumhouse. I was like, oh yeah, didn't they just recently merge? I guess. So there you go.
Yeah. So any closing thoughts, anything you wanted to mention that we didn't quite get into while doing puzzle pieces here? We'll start with you, Ben.
Yeah. Again, to get back to just, oh my God, stop doing it. There's the part where she opens the fridge and blocks the camera, and then she closes it, and then there's someone standing there as a jump scare. It's like, good Lord. The only other thing I had is I thought that part where like she goes under the water and it's all darkness, and they didn't quite make it clear enough to me that she didn't know which way was up, I guess. But then them like using the coin to reveal that they're actually upside down and like that's the way up, and then it's kind of like Get Out where she sees like the pool surface is very small and lit up, kind of like when he goes into the sunken place. And I was like, oh well, that's kind of a fun little clever thing to have, like you're so deep in the water you don't know which way's up. I don't know if they made it super clear that that's what was happening to her, but I thought that was kind of a fun like visual for sure. So
right on. Jacob, how about you?
What is a theatrical movie and what is a direct-to-streaming movie? No One Will Save You was like one of the coolest horror movies I saw last year, straight to Hulu. This movie has like straight to Hulu, straight to Peacock, kind of all over it. Five Nights at Freddy's was like day and date theater and streaming. I just do not, there is whatever, I know that there's a computer that is expensive to use that all these studios are using with this complicated algorithm that's telling them exactly how to produce their movies. Maybe some wild crap is caught up in everybody's contracts for how these movies are rolled out theatrically or streaming wise. I would just like to see it hammered out someday, because I think that when we're seeing these straight to streaming kind of level movies in theaters, and Prey straight to streaming when it should be in theaters, I think it's kind of not helping the theatrical model in a meaningful way. So that's kind of my closing industry thought on Night's Web.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird thing. It's especially the waters are muddy, not to talk pools, but with horror movies, like there's just no rhyme or reason which ones, you know, end up straight to like either Shudder or like, you know, something like that, and which end up in theaters. It's just, it's very just random. So yeah, it's a difficult thing. And I think we're seeing also as these streamers start, you know, showing that they're not really making the money that they, you know, once we're projecting that they were, I think we're going to see some changes and some things like that. But I don't know where that goes though. It's a very strange thing. My closing thought, the one thing I really wanted to mention, Ramona Penthaki, I think I'm pronouncing her name right. She plays the doctor who, she's Wyatt Russell's character's doctor in the movie. I couldn't stop thinking through the whole movie, this lady should play Cher in a movie.
And
then I looked her up online. She was a Cher impersonator.
Oh my God.
That's how she got the gig.
Yeah, let's make that movie. I want to see a Cher movie.
It needs to be, it has to be Baz Luhrmann or something.
Oh yeah, I'd watch that movie.
Hell yeah, dude.
For sure. So I think that does it for Night Swim. Let's talk about headcount a little bit. Maybe you just start off with, you know, what, you know, kind of got you guys involved with the project. I know you said that it was a 48-hour film first. What made you think that this was the one that would be right to try to expand first?
Ben, you're good at this one.
Okay. So originally, you know, we had been doing short films, and then we had a different film called Suspense that got to Fantasia. And kind of off of that, we were able to kind of get a little bit more connections and talking to people. And we really wanted to make this horror film that's set in an abandoned mall. And then we just couldn't quite get it off the ground. It's going to cost a little bit more than we wanted. And so eventually, a different producer stuff came back to us and said, hey, write something that's a little bit smaller scope. Big old quotations on smaller scope. And so then, me, Jake, and then our writing partner, Josh Doak, we were kind of kicking around some ideas. And then I said, hey, you know, let's take that 48-hour headcount film that we made and kind of expand that into a feature. And to kind of elaborate more on what the shorts and kind of the whole concept is, that there's this guy. And then, you know, we show up and we see him and he's got a gun pointed to his head. And through his inner monologue, you actually learn that it's his own gun. And he's trying to remember, like Russian roulette style, how many bullets are left before the trigger goes off and he gets shot. And then each click of the gun coincides with a memory of how that bullet was expended. And so we did that in the short film for about 3 minutes. And then to expand to a feature, we go, okay, let's take each one of these little, like each time he expends a bullet, let's make each one of those like a little kind of short film and then kind of weave them all together into a bigger narrative. And then that turned into the headcount feature.
Right on. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask too, is about the, like that whole framing device of that. It's like a really clever conceit, and like to use something like that to kind of essentially go back and forth in time, which, you know, is something, you know, we see in a lot of these kinds of thrillers, but also, like you said, it's almost like little short vignettes each time. Mm-hmm. you know, was that something like right from the get-go of making that short? That was like the initial idea, or was it something that kind of developed after the fact?
Yeah, I think the jumping around in time was something that kind of came together when we sort of had this idea that our main character, sort of his superpower is he has a great memory, and we can kind of expand on that in ways that get him into trouble later in the movie, and we can kind of use that to explain how he can remember so much about what happened to these bullets, and even have like memories within his memories. And it can get pretty, you know, Kaufman-esque at times. It's going
kind of
so deep.
Nolan, yeah.
Yeah.
Nolan-ish. But yeah, I think that was always part of the plan. You know, we had people suggest that maybe we make like a linear version of the movie. And I think that could work. But I think that this version just has a little more personality this
right
way.
On. So, right on. Right on. So kind of a two-part question here, because the lead, Aaron Jakubenko, I'm not sure.
Jakubenko.
Yep. Okay. And then your cinematographer, Christopher Commons, like working with these two, I think like makes this thing like really come to life because it looks great. And I think, Aaron, who plays Kat, is a great lead in the film. And so just, you know, maybe talk a little bit about working with both of them, because I noticed like neither of them really have a lot of credits to their name. Like you guys are all kind of, early on in your careers. So, about finding and working with the two of them.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of our production designer, Corey Hinesley. This is the first feature film she was the production designer for. So that whole, you know, the grandma's house scene, I won't spoil, but you know, she did an amazing job. And yeah, this is Christopher Commons. This is his second movie. I think he did one a long time ago. You know, Ben and I have built a lot of great relationships here in Kansas City. This is a big advertising town. So there's a lot of production happening and there's a lot of talented people. There's a lot of gear. There's a lot of lenses. There's a lot of people who want to work on narrative stuff. And we've just tried to build some relationships over the years. And we meet people who are really talented, but also really nice and hardworking. And I think that is what made a lot of this movie come together so well. And as far as Chris goes, Ben and I storyboard almost every edit. You know, you could watch this whole movie in animatics we made, and we handed that off to Chris. We handed off, you know, pages and pages and pages of mood boards and inspiration, you know, everything from, you know, Blood Simple to Resident Evil 4 at one point. And he did such a good job of running with it. We did upwards of like 45 setups a day sometimes. That's in typical movies like 20. So we had a 15-day shoot schedule, which is wild. We were really, you know, pushing it to get this thing done with not a whole lot. And yeah, we just had a great, talented, passionate, and kind crew that we're just lucky to have. And I don't think you know, if you're a filmmaker listening to this, I don't think you have to go to LA or New York or Austin. It's going to be more expensive there. You know, you're dealing with more expensive permits, and there's just the infrastructure. It's just different. And when you're in Kansas City, I found all the locations for this movie, and I did all of the VFX. And you know, when you're looking, or you know, you're the creepy indoor pool scene of this movie, me and my wife were just driving around. I saw a giant house that looked like an igloo, and I took a tour. We signed up for a tour, and then I said, this is cool, let's just write this into the movie. And sometimes that kind of reverse writing is better. You know, you have to use what you have available to you and squeeze the most production value and cinematic juice out of it that you can. And that's what we tried to do.
And I'll just speak quickly on Aaron Jakubenko, who came on board and did an amazing job. And he's originally, what's funny is that we have Australian producers, Continuous Pictures, who did a great job. And then they had connections to Australian actors, so Melanie Zanetti, whose voice is the mom on the hit kids show Bluey, and then there's of course Ryan Kwanten, and then Aaron Jakubenko, and there were some other Australian actors. So it's funny that like all of these Australians came to Kansas to kind of help us make this. And with Aaron, you know, he was just so professional. And we, you know, when we first met him and we were talking about the script, we told him, you know, this, the camera's going to be on you 95% of the time, because it's all from this character's perspective. And there, you know, he has to emote, he has to run, jump, fire, shoot, like love, laugh, cry. And we're like, this is going to be intense. And, you know, we're, this is a small film, and, you know, we're going to have to really pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. I don't like that phrase, but it's true. And, you know, he was just so game and did such an amazing job. He did, he, you know, he loved the crew, got, he was so good at. What's nice is when actors like interact with the crew as well. I know that like Ryan Quanten would talk to Bo Bohannon, our costume designer, about his look, you know, outside of me and Jake, you know, they, cause you know, they understand these characters and, you know, they want to bring their own flair. And, you know, Aaron works so much with, you know, Brad and Chris, our cameramen, to kind of understand shots and kind of how to move the best way. And I think on like smaller productions like this, everyone kind of gets more congealed together. And, you know, that could be bad sometimes, but, you know, I could see that with people, you know, blowing up and butting heads, but that wasn't the case for us. We had a really good time, and I'm just glad, you know, everyone came and, you know, gave 110% for sure.
We did a lot of Zoom rehearsals too. I think, you know, that we don't have time to rehearse on set. So we don't, we have, sometimes we have three takes and that's all for a big important scene. And, you know, that can be frustrating for an actor when you really want to get into it and take your time. But I'm glad we did those rehearsals because it goes a long way.
How long did it take for all this to come together?
We started probably about a little over a year and a half, I think, from the time we had finished the script to maybe two years or so to the time the movie was done. But yeah, like I said, the actual shooting was only 15 days. And then it took us a few months to edit it and put it together. Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. Right on. Well, you already mentioned Blood Simple and Resident Evil 4, but we got to do a few puzzle pieces here. But a few things that I was thinking about, you know, let me know if any of these were on your minds at all. Red Rock West, the John Dahl, Nick Cage, Crime Gone Wrong movie.
I've never even heard of this. Okay.
it's really good. I just watched it last year for the first time. It's from 1993. You know, just a drifter just ends up getting kind of stuck doing a crime for some guy, and you know, things kind of go south from there. Great cast, you know, a lot of intensity in there. Another one, Blue Rune, Jeremy Saulnier.
Yeah,
that seems like something that's like right up you guys' alley. Also, Arkansas from a few years ago from Clark Duke.
I need to see that.
It's a good little movie. Yes. I'm curious to see if Clark Duke gets to do another movie sometime soon as a director. I was also thinking of Cop Car, the John Watts movie.
Love that movie.
It's just like that kind of just, you know, tight, intense little thriller kind of thing. And the last one that I wrote down, Boogie Nights, as far as like going to a weirdo drug dealer's house and, you know, just how the hell is this person going to get out of here alive? You know, you guys really pull off that intensity in that scene. And you were talking about the production design. It really, really works. And it was a great big laugh reveal without giving anything away when things start to happen. So any others that maybe were like, you know, front and center on your mind when you were coming up with this?
I think two big pieces would be After Hours, Scorsese movie. That's just kind of one wild night guy being, you know, swept in the river from one crazy situation to the next. And then the other one would be Cool Hand Luke, which is, you know, spoilers, a guy on a chain gang and kind of a picaresque kind of character. Those are two. And Paul Newman was a big inspiration for this cat character. And we were really trying to tell Aaron, you're not Ryan Reynolds. You are not quippy, sarcastic guy. I'm sick of this dude. I'm sick of this character. You are, you know, you are more like a Paul Newman guy. Cats, you know, one of Cat's things is he just never lies the whole movie. And all his humor comes from from always telling the truth. And we were just trying to say, what is the Paul Newman kind of steady, you know, even-handed, level-headed guy who's really charismatic, who's not super eyebrow-raising, winking to the camera.
Sure. So,
Yeah.
And then,
but no,
I would throw in there, like, you know, Nolan with like Memento and Inception. Mm-hmm. It'll make sense after you see it. And then, you know, we're big fans of like Sam Raimi's camera work. And then, kind of Danny Boyle as well. And Edgar Wright and that kind of stylistic, letting the camera be a part of the scene until, you know, not just, you know, it's not a stage play, like filmmaking, like to me, it's important that the camera is a part of the storytelling and it doesn't have to like play by the rules, I guess, is something that we really like to incorporate. So, yeah.
No, and that really shows, like, that's a big part of what makes, you know, I know this is obviously on a lower budget, but you guys, you know, really make it cinematic and make this feel like a bigger movie with a lot of really interesting camera work and, you know, really taking advantage of the medium. So, it really shows how much, you know, you care about trying to use those kinds of tools there. So, I really enjoyed the movie. And where can people find it?
You can download it on Amazon. You can download it on Apple TV. You can get it on DVD at Walmart. You might be lucky enough to stumble upon it there.
Yeah, it's on like Vudu, Amazon, iTunes, Redbox. You can just Google and find it. But yeah, you can buy the DVD online or, you know, see it in the store. And so, yeah. And I think one thing we always say is if you like the film, go ahead and, you know, give us a nice review on one of the review services. That sounds pandering, but it actually is very helpful for, you know, I think a lot of people kind of look at reviews first. And for a small film like us, it's like those are invaluable people to kind of give us, you know, good feedback. And, you know, we like to see it. And if you hate the film, maybe just don't say anything.
That would be nice. Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
Do you guys, before I let you go, do you guys have anything you're working on right now?
Yeah, we're trying to make this movie called Follow the Leader. This is kind of our scary abandoned shopping mall movie.
Well, I got a puzzle piece for that one.
We've been trying hard to make that one. We're writing another movie at the same time. We have a lot of plates spinning. I think that what we learned is that you find have the project ready for when the right people come along. So yeah, and Ben and I are, you know, we just want to keep making movies that are interesting and doing things a little different. You know, I don't think we're gonna, you know, I don't think we're ever gonna make something that feels super cookie cutter. And yeah, because I think we've all seen those movies, but. Yeah, if you like Headcount, you could watch Suspense, a short film we did a few years ago. And you can go dig deep in our YouTube and go crazy if you want. There's crazy stuff there. But I don't and we're open books. So you can DM me on Twitter at Jacob Bernhardt.
You can send us money. That's cool.
Send us money.
That's always good. Yeah.
Yeah. We love coming on podcasts. You got podcasts and talk about anything. We don't care, but yeah, I think we're just trying to get this, like I was saying to David earlier, this movie is not made with a lot of money, did not have a big marketing budget, and we're really just trying to get people to see it, because I think if you're a fan of film and film history and interesting movies, I think you'd like it. So, and that's all.
Right,
that's
on.
My plea.
Please.
Please.
Well, guys, thank you so much for doing the show, and maybe we'll get you back again sometime.
That'd be fun. This is fun.
Yeah, Night Swim 2.
Yes. Or maybe, you know, something else. But
Okay. You got me. Night Swim 3. We'll wait till the trilogy.
Yeah, we'll space them out a little bit. All right, so that does it for that episode. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much to Jacob and Ben Burkhart for joining me on that one. Make sure you check out their film, Headcount. We talked about it on the episode, but it's a really great movie, and you should definitely check it out. Of course, make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts, because we got a lot more podcasts on the way, lots of episodes in the can, ready to go. And of course, we'll be covering a whole bunch more stuff in the coming weeks and months. You can, of course, follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show, and don't forget about our Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, another movie podcast that I produce, and from my music career. And speaking of my music career, I am going to play a piece of music to close this out like I always do, but I'm going to play something from an exclusive Patreon-only album that I released at the end of last year. I've got two more Patreon-exclusive albums coming up probably very soon at the time this episode goes up, but I'm in the process of getting them all prepped for release right now. But this is from one called Jacqueline, which was a horror film I scored for a friend, Chris Johnson, who I've worked with many times. I've actually released a couple of his film scores as soundtrack albums in the past. But this one, I decided to make Patreon only. So this is a piece from Jacqueline. The name of the track is Let Me Drive. If you like it, you can find the whole soundtrack. This is like a 2-hour and 10-minute horror film. I think it's that long. It's pretty long, but you can find the whole score as an album exclusively on that Produced by David Rosen Patreon at patreon.com/bydavidrosen. So check that out. Hope you enjoy the track. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon. Thank you.
All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.